Gather around your speakers, hoop heads. It's NBA story time. Jamel Johnson here to spin you tales of NBA shenanigans you didn't know you needed to know. Like that time when a little startup league tried anything to be relevant, or when Ricky Davis earned himself a dumb nickname. I also love you, Ricky Davis. Catch a new tale on NBA Storytime every week, then listen to the postgame where I break it down with comedians, ballers, and what have you. Find NBA Storytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Guys, what's up? I want to take a quick second to let you guys know that our podcast is supported by Anchor. That's right. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. I'm doing this ad from my phone as we speak. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. Evidently, I can't talk. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. Now back to the show.
This week, episode 68 of the Washed Up Walk-Ons podcast, your Thanksgiving special episode. We're bringing to you a look behind enemy lines. We have a guest today, Jeremiah Searles, who played for the Nebraska Cornhuskers back in the earlier this decade. You're going to hear his thoughts, our thoughts. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. Let's have a day. Let's go.
What is up, Washed Up Walk-Ons fans? I want to welcome y'all, the best fan base in America, to the 68th installment of the podcast. I emphasize that you guys are the best fan base in the country because we have someone on the podcast tonight who is probably going to try and refute that.
No doubt.
And listen, y'all, I have to admit that I myself can't believe that we brought somebody from the enemy into your guys' living room. But I promise you guys we did it for good reason, or your car, or wherever you're listening from. Our guest for Little Red Week is Jeremiah Searles, who played offensive line for the Huskers from 09 to 13. And then he was a teammate of Ike Butker's with the Buffalo Bills, which is actually why we got introduced to him. We met this guy in Nashville, and I couldn't believe that he wasn't a douchebag. I was pretty sure that once I found out he was from Nebraska, he was going to be the biggest idiot of all time. But he turned out to be a really cool guy, and the whole bachelor party experience was great. And we were talking about the rivalry, obviously, me, George, Ike, Kevin. You know, he was in, you know, the den of the lions, and we were talking the shit on the rivalry. And had the idea that I would go on his podcast and then he would come on ours. And so here we are. We're about to take a look at the rivalry from the enemy's perspective. And I told Jeremiah that he better have packed his shit talking pants because this is not the politically correct podcast that his is. And so you guys should be in for some pretty good content. So I'll let him introduce himself a little better and then we'll turn it over to Kluver.
Hey guys. Well, yeah, like you said, my name is Jeremiah Searles. I played at the University of Nebraska. I met all of the wonderful Iowa friends there in Nashville. And to be said, I mean, I knew when I showed up, I was going to have to be the smartest one in the room. So it was a nice change of pace to not be surrounded by smart people and just kind of go with the flow with all the Iowa guys. But I played in the league for the last 6 years. I started my career in San Diego. I was there for a year. traded, played for the Vikings for 3 years, and then I was with the Buffalo Bills last year. And then I signed a one-year deal back with them this year. Unfortunately, I got hurt, and I tore a ligament in my ankle, which really was upsetting. So I had surgery on that. I'm about 8 weeks out of that and rehabbing. So big game this week for the Huskers. I've been dipping my toe in the water of trying to be a broadcast with them, and it's been a bit of a dumpster fire for us this year, but I will always refute the fact that Iowa has the best fan base in the country.
Which is silliness, because you guys have a fake sellout record, and we actually just Pat Kinnick with people that are ready to get wild.
And then rush the field after beating a team that you haven't lost to at home since 1999.
Hey, easy. Here we go.
Hey, easy. They got excited.
I mean, come on.
In our defense, you know, we kind of told the fans, like, you know, probably not necessary to rush the field on that one.
I just, if you're going to claim that you're the best fans, if you're going to say, yes, we are the best, well, you got to be smarter fans than that too. I mean, come on. You can't just be like, oh, we just got really excited. Like, excited about what?
Can we blame the students for the ignorance and leave the longtime fans for, like, you know, just joining in on the excitement?
I don't know. I don't know if you, I feel like that's an excuse.
It's definitely tough to stop a bunch of drunk students or adults. They're going to basically do what they want to do. But I love the back and forth here to open this up. First off, Jeremiah, I have not met you in person, but I appreciate you coming on tonight. We swindled you into this. I want to start off and kind of bring it back a little bit. You gave yourself a nice little intro, but I want to bring it back and get our fans a little bit more knowledge base on who you are. What was it like growing up in Lakewood, Colorado? And what was it about, you know, going to Bear Creek High School that set you up to be the man that you are today?
I think the biggest thing, so, I mean, born and raised in Colorado, and I grew up, so to be honest with you guys, I didn't grow up watching much Big Ten football based on the fact that I grew up watching a lot of Big 12 football. I mean, CU, Nebraska rivalry, watching the Texas games, like, so that shaped me in the fact that I tore my ACL when I was 16 years old, my junior year in high school, and I at that point had about 11 or 12 kind of offers going to different Big 12 schools, a couple Big 10 schools, and I remember I went to CU, and they're the only school out of like the group there that pulled my scholarship offer and was like, you know, we don't know if you're healthy, so we're going to pull your offer. And at that moment, I was pretty much like, yeah, you know what, fuck you guys. And I'm going to go ahead and go to Nebraska, where I can pretty much beat you guys every single year. And so that was kind of my transition of out of Colorado into Nebraska. And as I got into Nebraska, as I fell in love with the state here, and as I was able to really just kind of plant roots here over my college years, is kind of how I've more stayed here. Now I come back and train at the university in the off season, but growing up in Colorado is a different Colorado right now than it was 10 years ago. I mean, I can tell you, just going back, it's a whole different world out there now with all the transplants from California and the population growth. I mean, Colorado's essentially turned into California 2.0.
That's kind of what we hear from Josie out there, is places just exploding. There's traffic all over the place and a bunch of potheads.
Basically, but it's much more beautiful.
Yes, yeah. That is a fact. It's hard to beat the beauty of the mountains and all of that nonsense that's up there, but I just can't handle the people anymore.
Yeah, Was it specifically that kind of that back and forth between the history of Colorado and Nebraska that drew you to Nebraska, or what else was it about the university that really got you there? You mentioned you had, you know, 11, 12 offers. What specifically about Nebraska really sold it for you?
So there was a piece of me of, I wanted to be, and I'm sure you guys kind of experienced this too, like, you want to be close to home, but you want to be far enough away from home.
Heard that.
I mean, there's a piece where it's like, I loved the fact that my parents could jump in the car and be at a game in 6 hours, but they couldn't just drive up for an hour and like, hey, we're spending the weekend here. So that was a big piece. And the other piece was, I was a huge Bo Pelini guy. I know he got a bad rep. He got a lot of crap for the stuff he did in the media, but he was an absolute player's coach.
It's funny that the three guys on this podcast are actually in favor of the Bo Pelini got hosed argument, and we think that Nebraska made a big mistake on him.
Yes.
Yeah, so 100%.
I'm glad you brought that up, because, you know, obviously he was not the media's favorite guy, but I always heard that he was well liked by a player. So can you just like talk about like what it was like playing for him?
Yeah, so, I mean, first of all, he's an absolute lunatic. I mean, I'll be the first one to admit that. He was the guy on game day that you completely stayed away from. Because
that was me and Kevin.
Yeah, that's Kevin.
Yeah, I've heard stories. We had
a couple coaches like that as well.
But, I mean, the thing was, during the week, if you needed to go up and talk to him, I mean, you were the first one to walk in his office, and whatever he was doing, he would stop and talk to his player. And he would be the first guy that he would stand at the podium and take the bullet for you every single time. He just got tired of, I mean, I'll say this, our fan base is probably the greediest fan base in all college sports.
Greediest.
Which, when I mean, they were upset that we're winning 9 or 10 games every year. And in my 5 years here, I went to 3 different championship games, one in the Big 12, two in the Big 10, or excuse me, two in the Big 12, one in the Big 10. And they were so upset that they fired a coach that won 57 games. And that's kind of where I think he got the rap of, like, I'm over this. Like, I'm tired of you guys questioning me. And, like, he got the anger piece to him. And so, but, I mean, he was such an amazing, like, I mean, you look at a coach as a dad figure, right? I'm sure all you guys would say Ferentz, like, you could go to him almost like a dad type guy. Absolutely. And Bo was the hard love dad type guy that he just never really showed to the rest of the world because he was a lunatic on the field.
No, yeah, absolutely. I mean, we love Coach Ferentz, and I'm sure you love Coach Bellini. And I can like, I mean, we talked about this on our podcast a couple of weeks ago. Like, people have no idea how hard it is to win at this level. Nonetheless, win at a championship level. I mean, he was cranking out 9-10 wins a year out there, and that apparently just wasn't good enough for the fans. And we talked about, like, at the end of the season, there's only going to be 20 or so teams with 8 wins, you know, maybe 15 with 9, maybe 10 with, you know, double digit wins at the end of the year. And, you know, it can be so close between, you know, an undefeated season and going 10-2 or 9-3. So, I mean, that he got thrown to the wolves because they were just expecting the world. You know, and it's not easy. It's not easy to deliver that.
I mean, you guys know it's not 1992 anymore. I mean, kids are not hidden gems in the Midwest states like they used to be, where Osborne back in his heyday could throw a net 800 miles around Nebraska and no one else was getting into it.
Yep.
I mean, that's just not the case anymore. There's the big time schools of the Big Ten. I mean, the Iowas, the Kansas States of the world are even getting better. I mean, and I don't know if you guys agree with this, but my take on college football in a whole is the talent gap between teams are getting so much smaller.
It's shrinking for sure.
I would say outside, like, the top 3 teams, like your Clemson's, Alabama, LSU, and Ohio State, there's a lot of parity beneath that level. I would absolutely agree with that.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm even saying to like a BCS to FCS type schools.
Sure.
I mean, you can see the scores being like, yes, there's still blowout wins and there's still, like, definitely outclassed wins, but I just feel like the talent gap and players coming out of high school are at a much better level that are going to those smaller schools and developing. Like, the coaching staffs, the strength staffs of those smaller schools are getting so much better that I think the talent gap is just going to continue to get smaller and smaller, and that elite group is going to stay elite for a while because it's really hard to compete with some of those guys.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I agree. 100% agree with that.
That goes back to, my dad always used to tell me, I mean, this was back in AU basketball, but it rings true in every sport, every level. Everybody's got players. And, I mean, you just saw it last night. Duke went down to Stephen F. Austin in college basketball. Anybody can beat anybody. It's a bunch of 18 to 22-year-olds playing a game. It's whoever shows up that night or that day. I want to know, once you got to Nebraska, tell us a little bit about your career there. When did you get onto the field? What did your career look like?
He played a shitload of games. I looked up his Wikipedia. He got a lot of PT. He saw a lot of tick.
So I redshirted my first year. I redshirted my first year, but I was in the 2D because we had some guys that got seriously hurt. Did my mic just cut way down?
Yeah, it seems like it did.
Hold on one second. I think that should be better. But so I got there my freshman year and totally expected to just redshirt and pretty much, like, that was going to be the end of it. But as you guys know, injuries happen, crazy things happen. And I ended up being in the 2D and I didn't play, thank goodness, because that's still when the redshirt rule was, you played one game and you were out. So I was able to stay on the two deep, and then the next year I ended up starting all 12 games, 13 games at left tackle for the Huskers, and then I tore my shoulder up during the year and ended up having to have off-season surgery on that. And so the following year, it was hard because we switched coordinators and I missed spring ball. So going into fall camp, I was already behind the eight ball and I lost my job to a JUCO left tackle that we brought in. And that was kind of a really humbling moment that I look back on and I was pissed, but I really needed that because, I mean, when you play young, you kind of think you're untouchable. You're like, oh man, I'm up here battling with the big boys. Sure. I'm up here battling like no one can touch me type of thing. And so that was really humbling for me. I only started one game that year and only played in like two or three. And then I was able to start the following 3 years at right tackle or left tackle. So I ended up being a 3-year starter, but I played in a lot of those games with like field goal and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And then my senior year, I got dinged up a little bit, but I mean, overall I played quite a bit at the university and looking back on it, I mean, it's hard to not want to reminisce, but I mean, those were the most fun days of football in my entire life. I mean, I got to play, I was lucky enough. I played 6 years in the NFL. And I mean, those memories that you make in college, especially like with your buddies, don't even compare to the memories and the stuff you make in the NFL.
Yep. It says, you know, I did a little research, obviously. It says you were the recipient of the Guy Chamberlain Award at Nebraska. What's that about?
It's an award. So Nebraska has a few awards that they give out, and a lot of them are like the Native Son Award, the Cleats Fisher Native Son Award, or the Tom Novak Award for the guy that came back. And the Guy Chamberlain Award is someone that exudes excellence on and off the field, because I always wanted to make sure that on the field I gave everything, but I wanted to leave Nebraska with more of a legacy than just number 71 played 54 games. I wanted to leave a legacy of, I liked being active in the community. I loved going, we used to go to hospital visits all the time. And I used to big brother guys. And so I think that was just something that I didn't really strive out to win that award. And I was extremely honored to receive that award. It's voted on by the coaching staff. So it was just something that I was excited to hang my hat on as I left Nebraska. And it's helped me as 6 years later, I go back in the university and I still know all the life skills people. I still know all the academic people, just because it was something that I wanted to make sure. And I think it's important for a lot of young guys that you want to build those relationships with those supports people at the university strongly and hold on to those.
Bro, you got to stop talking. It's getting a lot harder to hate you.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, boys. Like, I mean, this is what Drake said. Drake totally expects me to be a douchebag, and we showed up, and I mean, I'm just a Midwest guy that likes to hang out and drink beer.
It's let's go, man. And you got some good insight into the enemy side of this rivalry for the fans and for us, because like we haven't necessarily heard some of the stories of your times playing Iowa and the heroes rivalry, I guess they call it. So I just want to hear Ruth out of the story.
I mean, so it felt very forced. So I was in the first Iowa-Nebraska game, and Hy-Vee was like, we're going to make the Heroes Trophy. I was like, really?
Yeah.
Because for so long, it was Black Friday, Nebraska-Colorado, or Black Friday, Nebraska-OU. And those rivalries took years, I mean, years to build, right? So yeah. The thought process that you can just come into a conference and be like, boom, you guys share a border, rivals. Like, it always felt kind of forced.
I'm 100% with you.
And I mean, to be honest, the first time we played Iowa, it was at our house. We ended up winning. And then the next year we won. And then my senior year, we lost. And it really kind of felt like just another game until my senior year when we lost on senior day. And I really remember that kind of being the start of like, okay, this could be a rivalry. And then 2014 comes, we win in an overtime, like, walk-off fashion at your guys' place. And I remember like, okay, like this could get something going. But then we fire Pelini, and Eichhorst has the famous quote that I talked to you about on ours, Jake, where he's like, well, we'll have to reevaluate where Iowa was. And I remember him saying like that, and I was like, that's going to bite us in the ass. Oh, yeah. Like, I just –
you guys so know it hard. Is.
I mean, that quote gets brought up pretty much every team meeting the week of the Nebraska game.
As it should. I mean, we rightfully should. And until we do something about it, we deserve the disrespect on that piece. Like, it's just as that simple as you got to put your money where your mouth is. And it's granted, it sucks that these kids that, I mean, if you look at this recruiting class that's graduating this year, the 2019, they were recruited by Bo Pelini, coached by Mike Riley, now coached a year by Scott Frost. And so like they've been through the ringer, and it sucks that they kind of got to pay for Ikor's mistake, because that was a mistake. You don't give another team locker room board stuff, and not a little locker room like program board. I mean, that's probably up on programs all over your guys' place, plastered everywhere for
Drake
Iowa.
Did
but
that one time.
I believe it. I mean, and it's rightfully so. But for me, the Iowa game that sticks out to me the most, and it's, you're going to laugh at me, is 2011. We came out, or 2012. 2012, we came out to Iowa, and it was so damn cold.
I was at that game,
dude.
Yeah, I remember.
Oh my gosh, that was the worst game I ever played. Like I come out, I'm a very routine based guy, so I come out to do like my little routine pregame. Came out the tunnel, there was like no one out there. It was like -4 degrees. I was like, yeah, I'm going back inside. But I mean, for me, the rivalry comes through personally. The rivalry for me comes from more personal relationships with, I mean, guys on the team now that hate Iowa, or guys that I know that are Iowa fans, or guys that I know that played with, like that I met in the league that are Iowa. And like, that's for me is more of like bragging rights now. It's hard when you're not playing, but I think that until we actually beat you guys, I don't necessarily know if you can even call it a rivalry.
Thank you. Thank you.
It's hard. It's hard. I mean, I'm trying to be realistic here. As much as I diehard Husker and I hope to God they win on Friday, I mean, I got to be a little realistic here.
I appreciate that because, but you know, before I had a tweet out on Sunday that got people going on my Twitter following. I said, and it was my take is I respect Nebraska. I would be lying if I said that I wasn't a little bit worried about Friday's game, for reasons we'll get into in a bit. But for me, you know, you're a little bit older than us, but Kevin Drake and I, we grew up in a decade or two decades where, like you said, Nebraska and Iowa weren't in the same conference, right? We knew nothing of an Iowa-Nebraska game. And so we played in it, you know, in the third, 2014 was whatever that third year of the rivalry. And again, it same feeling that you had with the trophy and everything. It's like, okay, we're just like creating some trophy. Like, what is this game about? Like, we're just playing another team that's now in our conference. And it's not been competitive as of late. We've pretty much handled it the last 4 years.
No doubt.
Historically, all time, Nebraska has a pretty good grip on it if you're going to go that way. So other than the border thing and a trophy that doesn't have a lot of meaning behind it, I just don't feel the rivalry there either. The one thing that it does have is that fans hate each other.
That's where the rivalry comes.
That's where the rivalry is. A rivalry is shit talking. We don't shit
talk. And I fucking hate them too.
We don't shit talk with the fans of Illinois, man. But the shit talking between the Iowa fans and the Nebraska fans on Twitter is fucking comedy. It is more egregious than any other fan base between these two fan bases.
You're right.
Well, I guess I ask you guys this question. Growing up in, are you guys all from Iowa?
Drake and I are.
Okay. Did you guys respect Nebraska as a team that you watched? Did you see Nebraska and like kind of just like they were a fun team to watch because they're not in our conference, we're never going to play them, yada, yada, yada? Or was it just like, F those guys, we don't give a crap about them at all?
I think I was a little too ignorant.
Yeah. So my uncle played for Iowa State and my parents both went to Iowa State, so I was very familiar with the Big 12, grew up going to a lot of Iowa State games, and so I knew about Nebraska. To me, you were kind of just another team, not bad or good, just another team out there that was like Texas or Oklahoma, just another team in another conference. I didn't hate you or like you for either way.
I guess then how do you build a rivalry in college? I guess that's my question. Does it have to be through the fans, or do you have to get players?
It clearly has to be through the fans, and it worked. I don't know what it was that they did that made the fans hate each other so much, but it did work. And then us as players, like I know personally, I saw the bullshit and like I thought it was both funny and motivating at the same time because I just wanted to make all of Nebraska look really fucking stupid, you know, like you guys are cucks. I fucking hated you idiots. And that's just like, I wanted to punish you guys. So that's, I don't know. I think it was started from the fan base and it just kind of funneled to the locker room.
What's my favorite is the well, you guys have like the all-time series, like that matters
nobody.
To anyone. Like, let's be real. Like, that's my least favorite argument. I mean, the best argument Nebraska has against Iowa is the national championship argument. Because if you want to throw that out there, like, yeah, that's the epitome of the top. Yes, we have five. Have we won one in this millennium? No. But has Iowa? No. So I it's hard for me to get, I guess, look at this objectively until I think it goes on an honest back and forth like it did from 12 to 13 to 14.
Back to 15.
It won't. Back to 15. Yep. It won't be the biggest rival. I mean, if you looked at me and said, who's Nebraska's rival right now in the Big Ten, I would say Wisconsin.
I'm glad you said that because regardless of who you said, I was going to ask you that question because I wanted to know as a former player who you thought of. Because for Iowa, it's, you know, for me personally, it's Iowa State. It's Iowa State.
Oh, yeah, that's an easy one. I mean, you guys are very lucky that punt returner decided to bounce it off his face.
Yeah, that was nice.
It was fun.
But we'll take them how we can get them.
Yeah.
No doubt. I mean, did you guys ever lose to Iowa State? I mean, I feel like you guys have been pounding them for years.
We lost to them the same year we lost to you because we just sucked balls that year.
What was that, 14?
We play for four trophies, which I think is a little ridiculous, but we lost every trophy game that year.
Yeah.
I guess, okay, why is that? Why is the Big Ten this trophy conference? The Big 12 didn't have anything like that. Like, there was nothing. And all of a sudden we get to the Big Ten, it's like, look at this, the bronze pig. It's the axe. It's the Hy-Vee Heroes Trophy. Like, what? You guys grew up watching Big Ten. What is that about?
Yeah, I don't know. Because, like, there's one in the SEC. I forget who it is. And I think there's, like, one in the Pac-12 that play for a trophy. And that's about it. Like, all there's a shit ton of trophy games in the Big Ten. I mean, I like it. I think it's kind of
fun. Yeah, I don't know. I love it.
I mean, at some point, it dumbs it down.
Heroes one is a little, you know, stretching it. You know,
you start selling sponsors to the games. That's for me. Like, I get, but like, you start like, oh, this is a great sponsorship opportunity. It takes a little bit of the like moxie out of it.
Yeah, just get it 5 years before Floyd of Rosedale as a sponsor.
Yeah, well, for real, it's going to be like, the reason I don't like the trophy for the Nebraska game is because it feels so watered down, at least for now. I mean, it feels like eventually we're going to have the case of Busch Light trophy against Illinois, and you just go and grab the case off the other side.
No. That's against Iowa State, and you know that.
Well, but we already got a trophy for that game. But yeah, I mean, it's just weird. I don't know. It's cool. It signifies something for the game. It's that whole thing where you get to go over to the other team's sideline and take it from them if you don't have it.
Except fair. For the Nebraska one, which is forced, but it still works because the fan bases hate each other so much. I love the trophy games. I think they're badass.
I think for me, it was more of like, I didn't really understand it when we first got into the Big Ten. So it was really easy for us to, as a group of guys, like, this is kind of a gimmick, you know, like that's like, we kind of looked at it like this is kind of gimmicky, kind of, like really ridiculous, right. And the fact is we only play for the Heroes Trophy, and then I think they made up one with Minnesota of like the broken chair one or whatever, and it's for charity, so it's an awesome cause. But I think because Nebraska was so like late to this whole thing, we just kind of viewed it as more of a gimmicky type, this is bullshit type of deal,
right? And I definitely feel you there. You know, they kind of just force it like, oh, this is the only Big Ten team that doesn't have a trophy game. We should probably give them one just out of pity.
Yeah, basically.
Right, because I think most of the trophies have some sort of story or some sort of background. Like obviously the pig, you know, the governors played for a pig back in the 1930s. I think there's the brass platoon. I think between Michigan and Minnesota. I think I like that one. You know, they're a lot older, you know. They haven't just been pushed on us in the last, you know, 10 years, kind of like you said.
It's, right.
But, I mean, at the same time, you know, you come to a new conference. I mean, you have to play somebody on Rivalry Week, right? I mean,
yeah.
Well, I mean, you do, but it's crazy because they tried to do this. And now, I mean, next – I think this is the last big Black Friday of Iowa for the next 2 years. I mean, I'm pretty sure you guys – like, we play you guys, like, week, like, 8 or something – next year.
We play Wisconsin the last week of I think, is that next year or is it 2021 that starts?
It's one of the next 2 years, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just it's interesting that they tried to force this and then they were like, oh, okay, well, let's just change it. Like, if you really want a rivalry to develop, you got to give it probably, what, 5 to 10 years?
At least. Yeah. I mean, we've been playing each other for what now? 8 years now? 9 years?
Yeah, eight, nine.
And I see the hate, man. Like, what's going wrong?
I mean, the hate's brewing. I mean, you can't say that.
The hate's there, but the problem is, looking at it as a former player, is like there's nothing for us to hate on you until we win.
The same can be said about Iowa State. And that's the hard part. Like, they can't beat us either. Like, they are literally our little brother that we just piss on in the shower every year.
Wow. Okay. All right.
Aggressive.
As a little brother, I can say I've never been pissed on by either.
Well, I was neither an older sibling or a younger sibling, but if I had a younger sibling, I'm sure I would have pissed on him.
That's incredible where this is going. Okay, let's talk football. We're about a half hour
plowing ahead.
Yeah, we're going to talk some football here. Finally, 30 minutes into this thing. Since we've got you here, and what I wanted to end on, the last kind of question I had is, we've talked about your show. You now work for Nebraska, or I heard you guys discussing once I hopped on here before we hit record. Explain a little bit about your show, Just My Opinion. You host your own podcast. It's a live show on Twitch, interactive. I looked up a little bit about it, watched a few of the replays.
And I actually got to weasel my way into the ears of the Nebraska fans and talk that shit that I like to talk. So the Washed Up Walk-Ons fans.
Hey, guys. Yep, it's me again. Got to interrupt the episode real quick to talk to you guys about Spotify. One of the sponsors of this podcast. On Spotify, you can listen to all your favorite artists and podcasts in one place for free. You don't even need a premium account. Spotify has a huge catalog of podcasts on every topic, including the one you're listening to right now. Yeah, we're on Spotify. I don't know how we did that, but pretty cool. Other things you can do on Spotify is follow your favorite podcast so you never miss an episode. Premium users can download episodes to listen to offline wherever you are, and you can easily share what you're listening to with your friends on Instagram. If you haven't done so already, be sure to download the Spotify app, search for Washed Up Walk-Ons on Spotify, or browse podcasts in the Your Library tab. Also, make sure to follow us so that you never miss an episode of the Washed Up Walk-Ons.
As well as all of Hawkeye Nation got their little stabs in to the ribs of the Nebraska fans. Don't you worry.
He did. And he was professional about it, because I did tell him before and I was like, listen, I'm under an umbrella of a larger media company here. Like, there is guidelines to this. There's quote unquote on brand. But so when I got hurt this year, I basically was like, dude, I need to do something to keep myself busy or I'm going to literally go insane. And so I reached out and I was like, I play video games on Twitch, and I was kind of floating the idea of like, what if I did a live interactive show? And we broke down Husker football and like previewed the following week, and it kind of caught legs a little bit. And I just kind of launched it on my Twitch channel, Just My Opinion. And it's been really fun because I get to have former players on that like are my buddies. And I bring some guys in from the league that have played on opposite teams and get a good perspective. And for me, this is kind of it's a resume builder almost. I would, for when I'm done with football, whenever that might be, next year, 2 years, 3 years. I mean, there's no telling in the NFL. Broadcasting is something that I would like to kind of jump into and maybe like work for Big Ten Network, work for the university, do my own thing. Like, I don't really know, but this was kind of right. And so this was kind of my first dip of my own thing. I've always been a co-host, or I've always been a guest, or I've never run my own show. And I learned pretty quickly doing an hour by yourself is really fucking hard.
Yeah, I bet that's not easy.
Yeah. And when you go to, you know, turn that resume in for a broadcasting job, be sure to leave this one off it.
Yeah, this one will come off of it. I mean, but you guys probably know it's so much easier to do a podcast when it's positive.
Yeah.
Right? Oh, like, I've been sitting.
Yeah.
We lose half our listeners when we lose.
Jeremiah, I've literally threatened to never come back if we lose certain football games.
Dude, I can only say so many times, like, well, if we don't just throw interceptions and fumble the football, we'll win the game. Like, it gets to sort of like nausea point, but it's been really fun and it's challenging. But it's been a blast. And Drake, again, thank you so much for coming on. Guys, the fans actually really enjoyed that back and forth that we had a little bit. And I think fans are kind of interested a little bit too on what this game means to Iowa besides just the shit talking piece.
That's what, I mean? Hoping was going to get through from kind of your perspective to our fans is like what it means from the Nebraska players' perspective. And like, do they really want to beat Iowa as bad as we want to? Because to be honest, man, I was like a trained pig. I was trained to hate you guys, and I just did it really well. Like, I was a fucking hateful person, and they told me to hate you guys, and I was like, deal.
I think that that's starting to happen with the players. I think that Colin Miller, I don't know if you guys saw the quote, he at his press conference, he goes, Iowa doesn't respect us. And so you know that if he said that is the message being trickled down. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know how it is. We're Manchurian candidates. When you get on a podium, you stand up, you echo exactly what you heard from the head man. Yep. And like, you bring it down. So hearing the fact that he says, you know, Iowa doesn't respect us. They think they can just walk into Lincoln and do whatever they want. Da, 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 da. Like, that's the kind of stuff that the fans hear the players say. And so then they take to their keyboards and start attacking the other fans because Iowa, it's like, yeah, you're damn right, we don't respect you. Like, and that's the feeling of Nebraska feels that we are not respected as a football team. And the reason we feel that way is because we feel we should be respected off of 1970, 80, right. 90. Mm-hmm. And like, that's the feeling. It's like, we deserve the respect. It's like, well, you're only as good as your last at bat. And our last at bats against you guys, we've gotten the ball shoved right up us on the run game, and we haven't scored points besides last year being the closest game. So I think that's the biggest piece for Nebraska fans is just the disrespect, because we feel like we're a blue blood program. We've got history here. I mean, you talk about tradition and all of that. If you say tradition in college football in Nebraska, whether you love them or not, is up there in that conversation.
Yep, sure.
Based off of just what they did. And you got the strength conditioning program, like, was birthed here in, and like, you guys have in, for me, I don't know if you guys know, James Dobson was the strength and conditioning coach at Iowa before he came to Nebraska. And he would always talk about Iowa was strong and they worked hard and they big white guys that just love to lift.
It's pretty true, and to be honest.
It was right. And so I always had a lot of respect for Iowa strictly off of our strength coach. And then once I beat them 2 years in a row, we kind of started having that little cocky attitude of like, these guys are little brother, like you guys have now. And so I think that the fan base got pretty comfortable with the fact that Iowa was just going to be that team that CU had turned into on Black Friday, where Nebraska shows up, wins by 40, and they go to eat their Thanksgiving turkey. And so when that's not going well is when the fans start getting really upset and grasping it. Oh, well, you guys have never won any national titles, or when's your last Big Ten title, yada, yada, yada. And that's where the hate kind of goes through. But I was never trained, like you said there, Drake, to hate Iowa.
To be fair, no one trained Drake to hate anyone. He's predisposed to hate everyone. Okay.
Yeah, Drake's on medication, and we're working on it. It's a thing.
We're working on it. I can definitely see that.
So now that you're a part of, you know, Nebraska media, it's not just you're more a part of them than we are of Hawkeye Nation. We're independent. We can say what we want. Obviously, we have been for 35 minutes. I want to know what, you know, from your perspective, what were the expectations for this year two under Frost, and where did things fall through? Yeah.
I mean, the expectations were basically borderline.
Yeah, they were astronomical.
Right. I mean, if you really looked at it, and I'll be the first one to tell you, like, I was like looking at everyone like, we could win 10 games this year. And when I first heard that, I was like, no way. But then as we got closer to the season, I did exactly what every Nebraska fan does, and I drink the Kool-Aid. And I started sitting there going, yeah, you know, look at the schedule. We could win 10 games. And then we come out and we squander the one to Colorado, and I instantly got Brock back down to earth going, I don't know if we win 6 games. And I think the big reason that the hype was so real is because of players like Adrian Martinez. You had players like the Davis brothers, who are the senior defensive linemen. And we had what we thought were really key players in key positions. But the problem was those players didn't show up the way we thought they were going to show up this year. I mean, Adrian Martinez, in my opinion, has regressed as a quarterback, which sucks because you're only as good as your quarterback on offense. I don't care what level of football you play. And so as him regressing, we lose the all-time leading receiver in Stanley Morgan. We lose a big power back in Divino Zigbo on offense. And it all of a sudden looked like we're back to square one versus you expect to take that big jump in year two and think, okay, this is the year that you'll start to see more progress. And we've played better the last 2 weeks, but I feel like it's too little too late at this point. Like, who really cares? And I think that the big issue is we just don't really have the talent that Nebraska fans think that we have.
It's almost like you're segueing for me without knowing what I was going to ask. So this ties into, and you mentioned it earlier, that senior class has now gone through three different coaching staffs. It's hard to do anywhere, especially a program that's rebuilding. You're going to be rebuilding if you're going through that kind of scenario. Frost in the media has thrown some pretty subtle, but they're there. He's thrown out some things about some of his veteran players and some of the older guys on the team. He's talked about getting his guys in there. What do you think about those comments and some of that stuff that has come out?
I think it's interesting because Scott's not a guy to throw a guy under the bus. But I think he's kind of fed up with some of the crap that's gone on. And I look at it from twofold. I look at it from a coach's perspective where Scott has to put the team first in front of the individual. That's his job as a coach. And then I think of it as a senior, a fifth-year senior, and you come in and, I mean, you guys were at Iowa, had the same coaches for a long time. Like, what's the main thing that builds a culture? Consistency. Mm-hmm. Like, that is the number one thing when you hear the same thing over and over and over again from the same voice, from the same message, from the same letterhead. And if you're a fifth-year senior at this Nebraska right now, you've had probably two head coaches, two or three positional coaches, and you're kind of like, why am I going to sell my soul for six more weeks when things are going down and I'm just going to kind of do my thing and get out of here? And these seniors don't really remember what it's like to win. I mean, winning is a habit. Winning is something that is formed, and it's so much easier to remember how to lose versus to know how to win. And I think a lot of that, the senior leadership, or there's certain seniors that are just kind of like, you know, here we go again. And I think that's the kind of stuff that Scott's trying to get weeded out, mm-hmm. because that's a cancer. I mean, it's a mindset that if you have, I mean, you guys had the seniors, I'm sure you learned as freshmen, you learned from the seniors. And then when it was your time to be a senior, it was your responsibility to pass it down.
Yeah. Yep.
And I think that's the biggest piece that Nebraska has missed over the last 5 years.
Like, Jeremiah, I think that your voice right now in the Washed Up Walk-Ons fans' ears have them looking to the heavens and thanking their Lord that we have had Coach Ferentz for as long as we have, because you literally just reaffirmed what we were saying about our program would have gone and burned to hell had Coach Ferentz ever not been there.
Absolutely. I mean, it's so easy for people to think when things go south, like cut it off at the head and just start over. Like, that's not how it works. Like, be thankful for what you have. And I guarantee you go back and ask any Nebraska fan, like, so are you happy they fired Bo Pelini? Like, they go, you know what? I'd take 9 wins right now. Like, I'd take 9 or 10 wins a year and go into a conference championship game every other year. Like, yeah, I think I'd take that. So as much as this past 5 years has sucked for Nebraska football, it's humbled the whole state a little bit. I'll tell you that. Granted, we're always going to think we're 1995, the best team ever. But it's got to be at one point, like, you have to look at the product that's on the field and realize, okay, we went wrong somewhere. And where we went wrong is when Eichhorst fired Pelini and hired Mike Riley.
Yeah, and I think people just don't have any idea how hard it is to rebuild a program, especially one that's had significant turnover. So, like, you know, it's one thing if, like, a coach retires and, you know, an assistant takes over, there's a little continuity. It's another thing if a new coach and whole staff comes in, and it's another thing, like, Scott Frost got put in a shitty situation. Like you said, he's got seniors that have had two prior head coaches. Like, the turnover is insane. There's no continuity. There's no stability in the program. And for the expectations for him, you know, they were favorites to win the Big Ten West this year in his second year. You're not going to have the culture that you want to establish there yet. You're not going to have the leadership out of your players that you want to establish yet. So, I mean, like, he was really in a no-win situation this year. I mean, you guys talked about looking at schedules like, yeah, I mean, we could probably win 10 games. And you know what? To be fair, there's probably were 10 games on that schedule that you could win. Like, you weren't going to beat Ohio State.
Whoa, where'd you guys go?
Probably going to beat Wisconsin. But, you know, every other game was a winnable game. you know, some more than others, you know, some are a coin flip here or there. But, you know, to have that those type of expectations for year two of a program in the Big Ten is insane. You know, maybe he did it back in the American at UC.
Right.
That's a whole nother story. The Big
Ten is, I mean, he made a rebuild there look easy, and it definitely is not
right,
easy.
Right. And to expect that in the Big Ten is just asinine.
Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, the other piece of it too is Scott was put in a no-win situation. I mean, I guarantee you no one knew more than Scott how average Nebraska was going to be this year. You know, and he's stuck in this weird spot of I have to portray that we're going to be very good for the fan base, for recruiting. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a big piece, but I also have to manage this expectations of our players of like, look, like I'm saying this thing over here, but here's where we're actually at.
Yeah.
And that's every head coach's job. And everyone that was like, oh, run Frost out of here. It's like, dude, you run Frost out of here. No one's banging down the door.
Literally
to coach
no
Nebraska.
One would want to come to coach Nebraska. It's like, okay, so I go, you know, 4-8, 6-6, 6-6 again, and I get fired. Like what the fuck do you want me to do?
Which is why I'm glad that they just gave him that 2-year extension, because it kind of quieted everyone. Like, you know, it's like, oh my gosh, you extended him, and then he goes and loses to Wisconsin. I was like, what do you guys, like, what do you think was going to happen?
Yeah.
Like the asinine piece to it, like to think that we were going to win the Big Ten West in our second year and all that. Like, I agree with you. I was like the first one to be like, that's dumb. But for whatever reason, and it's because it's Nebraska, there's nothing else to do. You just sit and listen to talk radio and you look at everything. That's like, you know, yeah, you could do it. But I mean, to have as consistency that Iowa has, I mean, I poke fun because you guys are the best 7-5 team every single year, but that's a consistent thing that you guys have done. You've won 7 games, you win 8 games, you go play in a bowl game, rinse, repeat, and then every now and then you'll have the years that you win the Big Ten. That's what Nebraska wants to get to, and that's where we have to realize that Iowa right now is the benchmark for what we want to be. And then once we get to that way as a program is when we can start moving our benchmark to try and be Wisconsin, Penn State.
It's amazing, man. You just pissed in your own Kool-Aid for me, and I got to sit back and listen to it with a smile on my face.
Yeah. I'm telling you, man, I'm the first one that if you would have caught me at the beginning, I mean, you caught me in March. I was telling you, man, we're going to be good.
We were talking ass. So much shit. That's why I could not wait to get till tonight.
Dude, it's hard for me to talk shit and try and remain my credibility. And then I have no idea what product's going to march out onto that field on Friday. You guys have a pretty good idea what's going to march out onto that field on Friday.
Hungry dogs waiting to get in there.
Well, and
here's the thing. And we're playing better, though.
Yeah. And that, like, I noticed that about last year, too, is like you guys got a lot better throughout the season. And, you know, I think that's what people saw, and that's what they expected to continue into this year. And, you know, there's a little drop off there in the middle of the season. Now they're starting to play better again. So I'm expecting a competitive game. The last game was competitive.
Yeah. I mean, came down to a turnover at the end. And I mean, that's one thing that if we're going to win this game is we have to make Nate Stanley throw us a pick. And he doesn't do that often.
You did it again, because there's the segue. I was just about to say, regardless of everything you just said, Nebraska doesn't get to just throw the white flag in. You are going to put some product on the field on Friday. That being said, they are the underdog betting-wise. What will it take? You just mentioned the Nate Stanley interception, if you guys can get that. What else is it going to take for the Huskers to come away with a win on Friday?
I mean, I think the realistic expectation is the fact that Nebraska is going to have to score more than 24 points. Which is what it's that's the most you guys have let up all season. Your defense is extremely well, but I look at like how Nebraska's formula for trying to beat Wisconsin was. And I've watched a lot of Iowa games this year. The best way to try and beat your guys' defense is to spread you guys out and make you guys run side to side. Yep. I mean, you guys, Illinois did it. I mean, Michigan did it a little bit. And that's the strength of your guys' defense is you want us to line up like Wisconsin and just bang their heads against you guys over and over again. You guys will win that battle 8 out of 10 times right now because you have better players. But I think that Nebraska's edge on offense is going to be spread them out, get your guys' linebackers watching crazy things and having some of our athletes get on the edge and have Mills reach out there and run. I think that's our best bet. And I think we can score. My question is, I don't know if we can stop you guys from scoring. That's my one
You're
thing,
the
but
first person to say that also.
Yeah, it's interesting. Well, look, you know, at, I think usually think, you know, any Iowa games, like, okay, our defense is going to be good and our offense is going to be, you know, shaky at times. And you're kind of saying it's the exact opposite. You see that, huh?
I do see that a little, because that's what I thought about Wisconsin. I mean, Wisconsin's defense is very, very good, and we carved them up pretty good, because it almost was like Wisconsin looked like they were stuck in mud at times, and we were running side to side, and they just kind of didn't really have an answer for it. And I guarantee that watching you guys against Illinois, I mean, squandered away opportunity after opportunity to score points. And if Nebraska can just not do that, I think we mimic, you're going to see basically a mimic game plan of what Illinois did to you guys. And the difference being, we can't throw a pick in the end zone on the opening drive. We can't fumble the football. And because you guys' offense has had Nebraska's number forever, that we have to make sure you guys don't have a 40-minute time of possession game, which is what your guys' whole like deal is. That's the key. We have to keep your offense off the field, but we have to score more than 24 points. I mean, you guys look at it. What do you see? I mean, Drake said that we score 10. I think that's a little low.
I'm going to tell you one thing. I love the under in this game. It's going to be shitty weather. It's like at
1,000%.
What's 44? This might be the lock of the year. Under
44, man.
Dude, I'm telling you, it's supposed to. I just looked at the weather because I'm going to the game. It's supposed to be freezing rain and snow mix in the morning, and then switch to strictly freezing rain by noon.
That's disgusting.
Fans, when you hear this on Thanksgiving morning, go down to your nearest sports book. Drag whoever works there out of bed and make them open up the register and put down your mortgage on the under for the Iowa-Nebraska game.
Yeah.
1,000%.
Realistically, you asked that question.
And then I think the Hawks covering 6 is also a pretty big lock.
It's hard to cover points when there's not a lot of points.
When it's under. Yeah, and here's my answer to that, Jeremiah. I think you're right. I think you're going to see – you see it in the NFL all the time, especially with the offenses. It's a copycat league. What works,
absolutely.
What works, works. And Nebraska is going to watch that Illinois game. They're going to see what else has worked against the Iowa defense. What scares me the most is Adrian Martinez running around, your athletes running around, exactly how you said it. The Illinois quarterback is not the athlete that Adrian Martinez is, and he made us look bad very easily, ran for 8-10 yards multiple times against us. I hate that Nebraska's offense is kind of built that way. I see this being a very similar game to the Illinois game last week. I think it's a very similar score, except Nebraska gets that extra touchdown and brings it. I don't think Iowa covers, like Kevin said. It's hard to cover when you're under the points total. And I see this being like a 21-17, 20-17 game. I think Iowa wins it. It's going to be right around that 3-point mark. That's how I see this going.
I agree. And my thing, if it comes down to a field goal, you guys are going to win, because our kicking situation has been less than ideal all year. But I don't know if you guys remember last year, kind of very similar senior day, Nebraska, Michigan State walked in here and we ended up winning like 6-9.
Yeah.
And so I think you nailed it. I think that I say Huskers win, obviously, but I think it's going to be the 17-21, the 14-17 piece to it, because strictly the weather and the under is definitely a lock.
Lock, lock.
Drake, Kevin, you guys got anything else that you want to hit Jeremiah with tonight?
I mean, go Big Red, boys, as always.
Absolutely not.
Hawks by a million. How's our
boy Ike doing?
Dude, Ike boys are great. I was talking to him all day today. I mean, he's about to be a dad, which crazy. Is, I mean, being a dad's the coolest thing ever. Dude, he was my roommate, so we lived together this offseason up in Buffalo, and me and him just played video games nonstop, and the dude never has his shirt on. It's never. One of my favorite things of all time.
He lets the girth fly.
Dude, just a girthquake. I mean, he's incredible.
There's never been a better 330-pound or better-looking 330-pound man.
Oh, there's no question. And he's doing great. I mean, he hasn't got on the field this year as much as I would have liked to hope see. But I mean, that's part of the NFL. If guys don't get hurt, not much you're getting on. But I mean, I think he's going to be very similar to how my career is. He does it all. And so my thing is, you're a master of all. And I mean, jack of all trades, master of none. And the more you can do, the less you get paid, but you'll stick around. So I think Ike's doing awesome. I love that kid.
Yeah, we that's awesome. We love Ike too, man. It was fun. That bachelor party, that was a fun time.
We got out of hand.
See, we gotta make up an excuse. Have like a daddy baby shower party back in Nashville, dude. We gotta get some reason to get back there.
Yeah, I agree. I'm at the point. So I'm a little older than you guys. Like all my friends are now either married or like so far away from married that like there's no bachelor party in my future, and it's like I don't have an excuse to go hang out with anyone anymore, like down in Nashville or Vegas or Dallas or anything like that.
That's tough. Well, I think our fans are going to appreciate this episode. This is going to about an hour here. It's the first time we've gone out
and
an hour.
We still got to get to our degeneracy.
And we're going to end it with Ward's winners. He's going to bring them in. This is the segment that we do every Thursday before the games. Jeremiah, Kevin gives us his picks. So you're going to get to hear those. And Hawk fans,
hell yes.
Hawk fans are going to hopefully make some more money this week. Kevin?
Kev, give them the first one. And then let me introduce their possibility.
Oh, so you want – okay, sure. So
give them your lock.
So it's the last week. This is the last full slate of college games. So naturally, sad. Man, I was all over the picks. I mean, I've got 15 picks here. And I broke them down into a three teamer, a five teamer, and then Drake's gonna unveil the 15 teamer apparently.
And no, I'm not gonna unveil it. I was just gonna intro the fact that you have the absolute greediest parlay that I've ever laid my degenerate eyes on. But it's fucking pretty good. And I looked at him and I like couldn't really argue with that many of the picks. And so I was just gonna let the Hawk fans know that there might be, if they found an extra $5 in the couch, or if they took a couple less shits last month and saved some money on toilet paper or something, they take $5 down to Riverside and we actually try and burn that sumbitch like flat.
Drake, you're so excited to hear it, and I'm gonna have to break your heart like right now, because Maction was on last night. There was two games on last night. Ohio beat Akron 56-3, so they covered the 28. Michigan was 7-point favorites versus Northern Illinois.
Then give them the 13, man. We'll just knock it down a couple.
Western Michigan was 7-point favorites. They had to win to go to the MAC championship. Northern Illinois' starting running back entered the transfer portal on like Saturday and said, "Hey boys, I'm out," and didn't want to play. And you know, apparently Western Michigan doesn't like winning conference championships, so they end up losing 17-14. They played like shit the entire game. I was disgusted. Anyway,
okay, so we missed on that one, but
the fans can still get ready, which is kind of upsetting. But so my three teamer, my favorite three. Is Florida -17 versus Florida State. I got Ohio State -8.5 versus Michigan, and Arizona State -12.5 versus Arizona. We move on to my five teamer. I got Navy -7 versus Houston, Indiana -7 versus Purdue, Alabama -4 versus Auburn. Alabama needs a big performance, and they have to make it look flashy if they want a shot at making the playoff. Wisconsin -2 versus Minnesota. I just believe Wisconsin's the better team.
I disagree, but you know, go ahead.
That is your prerogative, sir. And then I got Clemson -26 versus South Carolina. Clemson's rolling over everyone this year. And then the 15 teamer, I threw in like seven more teams. I already told you two of them, but it's already dead. Let's see. I had LSU in there. I don't even like that pick anymore. I'd take A&M +17 now, because I just feel like that's going to be a closer game than I originally thought. Missouri -12 versus Arkansas. Arkansas is dog shit. Marshall -7 versus Florida International. I think Florida International is going to come off the high of beating Miami. And Mississippi State -3 in the Egg Bowl versus Ole Miss. Mississippi State needs to win to go to a bowl game. Ole Miss's season is already over. So yeah, those are who I like. I got a three teamer and a five teamer still alive. You know, we hit last week. Let's hope we hit at least one of these again this week.
it'll make it a real exciting end to the regular season, folks. Those are awards winners.
Thank you, Kevin, for that. For all of WashUp Walk-Ons Nation, it was a pleasure to have Jeremiah Searles on the podcast today. Everybody, go enjoy a big old plate of turkey and mashed potatoes. Drake, Kevin, and I are missing out on the Grays Thanksgiving, probably as we speak.
That's so brutal. And oh, man.
It hurts me so much. That and the Hy-Vee Heroes meal this week, it would be like back-to-back. Both,
that was nice.
Yeah, both incredible productions, and the amount of food is just insane. Hope everyone has their own Thanksgiving planned out and set, because it's going to be a great break, a great weekend of football. That's it for us. Any last words, Kevin and Drake, Jeremiah?
The Hawks are going to win by 1,000 times 1,000. I got the math right this time, I think. Go Hawks.
Hey, go Big Red always and forever, boys.
That's all we got. Washed Up Walk-Ons out.
Peace.
I'm MJ Acosta-Ruiz.
And I'm Lindsay Zarniak.
And together we'll be hosting the On Her Turf podcast. This summer, On Her Turf is hosting a daily Olympics podcast
that focuses exclusively on women's sports and the amazing women competing in Tokyo.
We'll bring you interviews with Olympians and in-depth analysis on your favorite teams.
Plus, we're going to talk about some of the challenges still facing women's sports today.
So join us daily at On Her Turf as we cover all the excitement of the Tokyo Olympics.
Be sure to check us out on Apple Podcasts, and be sure to follow On Her Turf on Twitter and Instagram too.